We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, I am your host and the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. So this episode is brought to you once again by you. Yes, you, the members of the Patreon. You're responsible for this, for all of this. So I hope you're happy with yourself. Like it or not, this is your creation. And if you'd also like to be responsible for this, all of this, like it or not, this would be your creation. You can also jump over to support the Bullshit Arts at our Patreon. That is patreon.com/MattHarveyStuff. We'd really appreciate it. Thanks a lot. But as much as I do appreciate it, and I do, the real heroes of these episodes are always our major sponsors. And boy, do we have a special one today. This episode is brought to you by the changing of the Lunar New Year. Very mysterious. That's right. The relentless march of time is ever moving forward. But you won't feel time marching all up and down your soft, squishy body because we created a circular calendar. Ooh, very mysterious. A calendar that feeds back onto itself every 12 years. Just as you stop being excited about the decade that just passed, suddenly your year is on the horizon again. And then suddenly it's here and it's time to start fresh. A new you, a new year. Congratulations on starving off the boredom of existence for another decade. This year is, of course, the year of the snake. And what better way to celebrate the year of the snake than by shedding the skin of a stable democracy, very boring, very unstable, and reintroducing chaotic stupid into the political landscape in the form of one Donald Trump, the biggest snake of them all, the world snake, who will eventually bring Ragnarok upon the world, and with it, the only hope that we can actually get that we will finally be rid of Trump. So happy Lunar New Year to you all, if you celebrate. But really, truly, as much as we appreciate our major sponsors, we actually couldn't do all of this without my live shows. So first, and I have to say big thanks, huge thanks, to Perth and Rockingham for everyone who came out to see those shows. Damn, that was a lot of fun. I really appreciated you guys turning out the way you did and just making those shows feel really special. If the rest of the year is anything like that, we're really going to have something here. So, if you'd like to get in on the fun, I'll be heading your way pretty soon, most likely, assuming you're living in one of the following places, of course. I'll be in Kimba in South Australia on March 8th, Port Augusta in South Australia on March 9th, Adelaide. I will be at the Fringe in the Adelaide CBD from March 12th to 23rd, doing both of my shows, I Got Bit By A Monkey Once and Wage Against the Machine. Mount Gambier, I'll be with you on March 26th. Castlemaine on March 27th. Melbourne, one show only for the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, April 11th. So if you're in Melbourne, let's make that one a big one. Then I will be off, away to San Diego, from May 15th till 25th for the International Fringe Festival. Darwin, I will be returning to you in July, I believe, from the 17th till the 20th of July, and there will be more dates and deets as those things are allowed to be revealed. Until then, I will be the bearer of weird news. Alright, guys, let's get into the headlines. A report by Special Counsel Jack Smith says the evidence was sufficient to obtain and sustain a conviction of Trump over his failed attempt to cling to power in 2020. With one tiny little catch, and it really is a very small catch, he just needed to not win the re-election in 2024. So fortunately for all of us, that definitely didn't happen. And all is well in the world again. Speaking of horrible dystopias, footage of Trump dancing to the YMCA on stage with the village people at his pre-inaugural victory rally was doing the rounds online. At least, I think it was the YMCA. Trump definitely wasn't doing the one and only dance that we all know that is associated with that song, so it's hard to actually tell if that was happening. And I think it was the village people. I mean, the lineup seemed to be a little bit different to what I'm used to for the village people. The lineup was just actually three cops, a man in a really pointy white hood, a well-dressed fellow in a brown suit who didn't use the actual correct dance moves. It was sort of more like a half-wide, sort of 45-degree angle, you know, pointing straight out type maneuver. Now, if you thought the next 4 years were going to be a grueling schlep to doomsday, well, good news! The doomsday clock has ticked forward to 89 seconds to midnight. So in a way, it's kind of peaceful knowing that it'll all be over soon. Just, let's take a moment and enjoy the inevitability of oblivion. Just deeply breathe it in and deeply breathe it out. Not much longer now. Nailed it! Now, some more jokes. REM lead singer Michael Stipe called for a Meta boycott to protest the rise of the US far right. He wanted to say, it's the end of the world as we know it, and this recommendation went out to the ones he loved, that everybody hurts sometimes. But they were the greatest thing since bread came sliced. They wouldn't have to become a man on the moon to be a shiny, happy people again. No, no. We'd have to just simply get rid of the US's orange crush. Reportedly, Hamas has given three hostages gift bags upon their release. The bags contained items such as a necklace and photos, a certificate that in Hebrew and Arabic read acknowledgement of the receipt of Israeli prisoners, and the final item in the bag was a t-shirt that read, both in Arabic and in Hebrew, I was a political pawn in an unending power struggle perpetuated by Western powers, and all I got was this lousy t-shirt. Oh, and there was also a coupon. Good for one coup. Careful where you redeem that. Peter Dutton attacked woke bankers, saying a coalition government would lean on banks to lend to credit-worthy businesses in fossil fuels, forestry, and agriculture loans after banks rejected them on environmental grounds. Ah, you know banks, the main villain in Mary Poppins. Do you remember? Banks? Always doing woke shit like systematically overcharging customers, or charging dead customers, extraneous fees, causing the global financial crisis. Always so woke. Well, actually, to be fair, that last one did significantly impact capitalism. So I guess, welcome, Comrade Woke Bank. The revolution is this way. And on Wednesdays, you wear camouflage. A new Politico story about concerns that FBI UFO hunting agents may soon be caught up in a purge accidentally revealed the existence of a UFO hunting FBI office existing within the Bureau, which had apparently not been disclosed publicly before. Very interesting. Because I'm, well, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm pretty sure I already knew about this. Wasn't that department run by David Duchovny? I mean, they had a reality show that ran for like 10 years. Government documents revealed Australia allowed thousands of imports from Chinese companies blacklisted by the US over alleged links to forced Uyghur labour, including a supplier of parts to Sydney Metro vehicles. And here I thought the passengers were the saddest people to interact with Sydney Metro. Whew, couldn't have been more wrong. And I'm just gonna say, government, come here. I'm surprised by you. If you wanted labour produced for pennies on the dollar by people who are being subjugated by a government system of oppression, you already have work for the dole. At least then your oppression is locally sourced. I think, as always, you need to support local. Trump has pardoned Ross Ulbricht, the creator of the world's first dark web drug market website, Silk Road. After being arrested 11 years ago on 7 charges relating to the distribution of narcotics, money laundering, computer hacking, as well as a continuing criminal enterprise statute. Because let's be honest, in Trump's America, this falls well below jaywalking as far as criminal offences go. In fact, I heard that he's already offered Ulbricht a position in his cabinet. Yeah, he's going to be the Secretary of Homeland Scamming. Well, that's it for the headlines today. Let's move on to the bigger stories now, starting with biology news. We are starting in the country we once called the United States, as it continues to be rendered into pieces by the second coming of the Trump presidency. But ever the kind of man who would continually plow through, regardless of what anybody else said or thought, Trump has proposed a, we'll say, unique stance on bringing the country together as one. As Trump has proclaimed an executive order proclaiming the US government will recognize only two sexes, male and female. The missionary sex of genders. Boring, but efficient. Enough to get the job done, but definitely lacks a certain quality that would cause your grandparents to be confused, but possibly supportive, depending on your household. Here we see the footage of him declaring the change.
Boys have a penis, girls have a vagina.
Senior White House officials detailed the order as part of what they are calling the Trump administration's wider restoring sanity agenda. Admittedly, it's much better than the original name that they gave it, the Fuck Your Rights Agenda. You have to admit, it is a much more subtle name. I didn't think he could do subtlety to that scale, but here we are. Now, I'm not sure whose sanity it's supposed to be restoring, because denying gender-affirming care has proven to increase instances of negative mental health in those being denied, up to and including instances of suicide. But the good news is, boomers across the country do not have to remember to say they/them and can go back to judging people purely on their haircuts. So, victory, I guess? I guess we're all feeling good now. And as a man who has, in the past, had long hair, and as a result of that long hair been wolf whistled in public, as well as had my buttocks groped by men in public spaces when they were trying to get through a crowded space purely based on the length of my hair, because when I turned around to show them I had just a tiny little bit of facial hair, boy oh boy, did they feel very different about the whole situation. He also tells me that if I had been born a woman, I wouldn't have any trouble getting some, but I don't know how I feel about the quality of the some I would be receiving. I think it's time for sit-head men and women across the country to start doing the great haircut swap. Men, grow out your hair. Grow it long as you can. Ladies, start getting them short haircuts. Make those boomers as confused as we can make them in any and all opportunity that we can. I think it is, you know, your civic duty to confuse boomers with your haircut. I understand further attempts to restore sanity will also include removing diversity quotas, because management declares loudly at the beginning of every interview that they don't see colour unless you are interviewing a white person, as they don't need to hear that to be reassured. Not that you would know who the white people were, because you don't see colour, right? mental health is no longer a thing in America, it would appear. It's like COVID. If you test for it, then all you're doing is creating more cases of it. So, no more mental health diagnoses. Everyone is just given a regular mental health status, and if we need to, then we can reinstate frontal lobotomies to ensure that you aren't sad anymore. Aren't you lucky? Oh, and no more endangered animals. And in fact, all animals are now classified as okay to serve as either a steak, burger, sausage, or some sort of mince meat. But no fancy meats. No charcuteries or parasite-free meat, if that's your go-to. I feel like if parasite-ridden roadkill is good enough for Robert Kennedy, then it's good enough for you too. The Gender Order states that it will defend women's rights and protect freedom of conscience by using clear and accurate language and policies that recognize women are biologically female and men are biologically male. Freedom of conscience, that's a big idea for a man who's stared directly into an eclipse despite being told not to. Freedom of conscience is the right to hold and express beliefs, values, and ethics without interference from the state. Just let the irony of that sink in for a second. Specifically, without interference from the state. I mean, how can the state ensure your freedom to express beliefs without interference if it is busy imposing a false binary by bureaucratic force? I wonder. Biden might have been a bit of a rambling old man, but at least in 2022, his administration allowed US citizens to be able to select the gender-neutral X as their marker on their passports, though, as Elon Musk would prove, nobody wants to associate with X anymore. But Trump is requiring a federal government to use the term sex instead of gender, despite scientists knowing for years now that sex is also a spectrum. As many as one person in 100 has a form of what they call intersex conditions, or differences or disorders of sex development. So even if Trump went around the country and looked up the skirts of every woman, because let's be honest, he only uses his power to spy on women, he's not going to be looking down the pants of men. Ew. Gross. That's not the kind of man he is. And personally, assign you a sex based on what he sees up your skirt. He'd still be wrong more often than not, which is, even for him, pretty astonishing. I mean, even in Jurassic Park, they couldn't control the sex of dinosaurs, and they spared no expense. So this expense-cutting motherfucker, he's not gonna cut it. But this obsession with the binary nature of sex and the biological classifications has caused him to unite the country in a most unexpected way. See, Trump has accidentally made everyone in the US a female, regardless of what genitals they have in their pants. American men all across the country are hit particularly hard as they are now subject to all the shitty rules that they put in place for women. Starting with getting a taste of what it means to be a woman in America as the government has taken control of their bodies. See, here's the thing. Trump's executive order provides explicit definitions of the two sexes, which are to be applied to all interpretations of the law. Sex shall refer to an individual's immutable biological classification as either male or female. Declaring female means a person belonging at conception to the sex that produces the large reproductive cell. Male means a person belonging at conception to the sex that produces the small reproductive cell. The only problem here is the specific wording, really. Technicalities and application of his executive order aren't as simple as they sound. You see, conception is the point when the sperm and the egg join, otherwise known as fertilization. Regardless of whether they have XX, XY, or an alternative chromosome pattern, all human fetuses' sex organs are identical at conception, in that they have none, right? Fetuses subsequently develop in the same manner as each other, regardless of their chromosomes, until approximately 6 to 7 weeks after conception, at which point the Y chromosome typically expresses itself by inducing the development of testes. That's when the lads come out to play. If a Y chromosome does not do this, the fetus will continue to develop female genitalia, because we all start as female. You understand? At conception, every single human is a female, and it's not until 6 or 7 weeks that the males start to define themselves. So first up, congratulations, Iron Man, to Donald Trump, the first female president of the United States. Let's give it up for them, listeners. Yes, congratulations. Huge, huge win here. When Kamala lost the election, we thought we'd have to wait till AOC was ready to make a run for the big seat before we would see a female president. But Trump, as she is known to do, has done something unprecedented and changed the game. Maybe forever. So many firsts. So many firsts. Where do we begin? First female, first felon, and now first female felon. I mean, it's just smashing the glass ceiling, one stupid decision at a time. I guess he was right in 2016 when he said they'd be winning all the time. Look at all these wins. All humans start life as women. All of us. That's why men have nipples. It's just a precaution, you know, in case of an emergency, install nipples. But if, like you insist, biology is determined at conception, well, not only are all of us female, those who insist that they are male, despite their biological classification at conception, have technically transitioned before birth and now have the choice, either a woman or a trans man. Those are the only options by your definition. And I tell you what, J.K. Rowling is gonna have a fucking heart attack. So many new women to hate, so little time. Moving on now, it is elephant news! Staying in the US just a little bit longer, yes, I know, I apologize. It's a nice place to visit, but we wouldn't want to live there or take an extended vacation there. So, just a tiny bit longer, I promise. It'll be worth it. When you hear all about this, a bid to free 5 elephants from a Colorado zoo has been rejected after a state Supreme Court Justice Maria Birkin-Cotta ruled elephants are not people. Justice Birkin-Cotta was told that she had made a very powerful enemy that day because an elephant never forgets. An animal rights group tried to bring a habeas corpus claim to a legal process which allows a person to challenge their detention on behalf of the elephants, arguing Missy, Kimba, Lucky, Lulu, and Jumbo were effectively imprisoned at the zoo and filed to have them moved to an elephant sanctuary. I had a habeas corpus joke written, but there was nobody present to hear it. On the plus side, though, the justice did acknowledge the elephants as being majestic, which is more than a lot of us get in our lifetime. So, congratulations, elephants. I've certainly never been described as majestic. Not funny, sure. Annoying, yes. Stinky, on occasion. A know-it-all, definitely. Bit of a cunt, sometimes. And one time, just one time, as a person from... Okay, as a person from, like, all of my work colleagues, we were doing a bit of a, like, who would you pick to be on your zombie apocalypse survival team, right? And this person picked me by saying, simultaneously, that they wanted me on their team, but also that they were worried that I would get sick of them and leave them. But they were still willing to have me on their risk, which I think was a bit of a, maybe the best compliment I've ever had. just really understood me. You know, just nailed it in one concise hit. Now, thanks to habeas corpus, someone accused of a crime cannot be imprisoned unlawfully and have their fate decided without their presence in court. So I guess the question is, did the activists hope to achieve getting the elephants in court? Like, if they pulled this off, was that what they were planning? Just bringing the elephants to court? Maybe they're going to do a bit of cosplay, dress up as an elephant, and make themselves heard? I don't know. But maybe, most importantly though, habeas corpus guarantees us the right to be present at our trial. It does not guarantee any trial to be free or fair, which... I mean, you think a kangaroo court is bad? Well, wait until you see how an elephant court plays out. As far as corruption goes, it's killing a fly with an elephant gun. The activists argued that the animals had a right to freedom because they were emotionally complex and intelligent animals. And while I don't doubt that they are, I'd be careful with this definition. I can think of some CEOs and world leaders who would fail the emotionally complex test, and we do technically still consider them human, even if it is increasingly obvious that they are robots powered by taking money from the poor. According to the law, person, the definition, has never been synonymous with human. For more evidence of this, I'll refer back to my previous statements about CEOs, and you can take that with a grain of salt. Non-human entities like corporations are legal persons in America, and for a long time, many humans didn't qualify as persons. And even though you had to do some divisional maths for a few decades there to make some people classed as humans, the law divides everything into two legal categories, person or thing. These days, if you're not a human or legal entity, you're a thing. And not the fun kind of thing that gets to hang out with Wednesday Adams, no. More the kind of thing that ends up in detention, a beautiful and remote Pacific Island detention, nonetheless, still a detention. The writ of habeas corpus is a historic legal pathway used by slaves to gain legal personhood and freedom. It was critical to the abolition of slavery and the expansion of the legal definition of person to include all humans, not just light-skinned humans. Yet, I'm still not sure this message has actually disseminated down into the masses as much as we would have liked. Am I right? Certain public figures? Still seems to be a few people who haven't quite got the message. Freedom is a great concept with terrible marketing. Seems freedom needs a new motto. So how about we try freedom, no longer just for whitey. I'd give it a crack. I feel like it would land. The Colorado Supreme Court said the matter boiled down to the elephant in the room, whether an elephant is a person, and therefore had the same liberty rights as a human, which they ultimately decided they did not. This does put a bit of a downer note on the sequel to the beloved children's book, Horton Hears a Judicial Ruling, with its famous message of inclusivity, a person's a person no matter how small, except for the elephants, fuck them all. I hate to go against old Horton, but of course an elephant isn't a person. It's not a corporation. Come on, let's not be crazy. If these elephants were serious about this whole thing, they would have incorporated before attempting to head to the courts. It's just simple maths, guys. Look at history. Get your shit together. They would have done some funding, lobbied Congress for elephant personhood, donated to both major political parties in a desperate attempt to hedge their bets in the election, and then, regardless who won, they would full trunkedly trumpeted their support for that party. It's the American way. So frankly, this is the elephant's own fault. Don't feel bad for these elephants. Personhood isn't all it's cracked up to be. It's not like humans aren't held in detention without due process all the time, every day, in all major power countries. and even here in Australia. I'm sure if you ask the zookeeper, they'd tell you that this elephant is clever, too clever, suspiciously clever, that it's up to something, and that it is under suspicion of terrorism. What's the charge? What's the charge? Being an elephant? A succulent elephant? And as such, they must be held indefinitely for national security purposes. Moving on now, it is What the Fuck Are You Saying News. Alright, coming back home to Australia. We're leaving the US behind now. And it's on to our newest tradition, the yearly Invasion Day / Change the Date argument. Huzzah! Is it even summer in Australia if some political figure hasn't gone on TV and attempted to score political points by addressing Australia Day in some capacity? Well, usually to attempt to reignite the culture wars, because aren't we cultural? The only wars harder to end than the emu wars, the culture wars. And as we debut our newest segment, Mad Attacks Beyond Blunder Dome. We don't need another hot take. Today's verbal kamikaze pilot is Liberal Party Deputy Leader, Minister for the Environment, numerology scholar, and person who asked for 9 vowels in Countdown, Susan Ley. Susan has bravely stepped into the limelight to protect her boss from being the focus of public scorn this year when she compared the first fleet landing in Australia to Elon Musk's mission to Mars. A foolish statement for a number of reasons, not least of which is that the first fleet actually happened, like they actually went to Australia. Musk, I'm just gonna say it now, is never getting anything to Mars. He continuously claims that his car is in the orbit of Mars, but it's no one. It's nowhere near Mars. Ley said those first settlers would be confronted with a different and strange world, full of danger, adventure, and potential. And went on to say, much like those first settlers, they plan to heavily subsidize the cost of building the society through a workforce of indentured servants who are trapped there. They'll probably even use liquor as a currency, as there is no need for money on Mars. Susan burbled some more in an attempt to justify the statement, saying the British settlers aboard the ships faced uncertainty when they landed 237 years ago. Like so many of our colonial stories, it could have ended in a disaster and collapse. So, let me get this straight. Are we speaking for the natives or for the settlers when we say it could have ended in disaster and collapse? It's almost as if, and I don't want to be disparaging here or presumptive, but it's almost as if they've completely dismissed the Indigenous experience in their assessment of the colonisation of Australia. I suppose what they called the Black War in Tasmania was simply like the war on Christmas, and not like, say, the war on Gaza. Let me just do some, let me look it up here. Black War. Big list of wars here. The Black War. Here we go. Here's a some pre-prepared materials. Oh no. That's bad. That's real bad. Listen, good listeners. I think I'm gonna have to be the one to let you look this up yourselves. No bad news here, only weird news. But you can look it up. Have fun doing that. And get back to me. Well, no wonder they have been so adamantly in support of Israel all this time. If they think the near eradication of a people and a culture isn't colonization ending in a disaster and collapse, then I don't know what it would take, to be perfectly honest. What could it possibly be? Well, I could take a wild guess. And we have it in abundance. What skin? Get a little bit of white skin in the mix, and suddenly, I bet it would be disastrous and a collapse real fast. The problem, of course, with Susan's statement, see, unlike Australia, there is no evidence of past or present life on Mars, unless you count the uncontested robot Lords of Mars, Sojour, Spirit, Opportunity, Curiosity, and Perseverance. All hail our new robot Lords of Mars. Researchers have estimated as many as 1.5 million Indigenous Australians lived on the continent prior to colonisation. And now, just quickly, now 938,700 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people live here. That's a big drop-off, guys. What happened? What happened, Susan? What happened? If it wasn't violence, Susan, what happened? I guess they all just moved away for no reason from their homeland. They went full panda and just stopped fucking, hey? What happened, Susan? She then had the audacity to say, "The imperial impulse to extract wealth and rule through naked violence could have been the norm, but that would not be our fate as a nation." Is she sure that this is Australia she's talking about? This wasn't like the Liechtenstein Day speech that she was accidentally reading out instead? I mean, we're still extracting wealth, often through naked violence. Am I wrong? Come on, climate protesters, where are you at? Who are we trying to kid here? It's in the fucking anthem. "With gold and soil and wealth for toil, our land is girt by sea." The girt by sea part isn't relevant right now, of course. It's just a good reminder that our anthem has the word girt in it. And not because it was needed for the rhyme. There was a completely unnecessary inclusion of the word girt. When we changed the anthem, we could have changed girt as well. What would you put in its place? It's such an unusual small word. Bound. Bound. It's not hard. Our home is bound by sea. See? Done. Knocked it out. No, I'm too angry now. Moving on. On to the next story. Going on now is election promise news. Guys, it's 2025, so it's election time in Australia. 2024 was a huge year for incumbent political parties being voted out or having their leaders quit. And Australia waits with exasperated breath as we line up for the battle of our lifetimes, well, at least until the next great battle of our lifetimes in 2028. The 2025 Great Blunder Down Under. With an election due by May 17th, it's time that we explored our options. Before we get into the big parties, let's look at what some of the smaller parties are offering you, not to vote for one of those big boys. So let's get into it, shall we? Let's start with crossbenchers David Bocock and Kate Chaney. They have urged Labor to act immediately on deepfakes and misinformation before the next election, as the AEC has issued a warning about AI and foreign interference in the upcoming election. Seems pretty reasonable, especially after Labor initially introduced truth in advertising laws into Parliament last November, alongside separate legislation to overhaul electoral funding and donation rules. The package was ultimately pulled in the final sitting weeks before Christmas due to lack of support. So they rightly fear Labor has no plan to progress political advertising reforms before the election. So if at all, I guess, because if they're not doing it before the election, why would they bother doing it after? These reforms were a larger pile of trash than the Pacific garbage pile. They wouldn't even stop with the spread of false opinions. They're the Sky News of political advertising reform laws. It'll just be political advertising laws after dark. Ooh, all opinion, no facts. You know their motto, why fix it if we can take advantage of it ourselves? At one point, we were going to try and outsource this job to digital platforms, somehow expecting them to take steps to protect the community from electoral disinformation, when that's how they make all their money. That and the monetization and weaponization of your fear and nostalgia through a mix of Minions memes and racism. Though it is for the best that we didn't go down this road, given social media embracing the destruction of fact-checking even more than Elon Musk has embraced white supremacy. Amateur champ, look at you, throwing your heart out to the white supremacists. 72% of Australians agree that they are concerned about the lies and misinformation that circulated on social media during the referendum campaign. Australia Institute research showed more than 60% of people who voted no were concerned about the misinformation and disinformation that circulated on social media during the referendum, with more than 80% of them still wanting to see truth in political advertising laws in place before the federal election. And that's just the no voters. They still embrace the chaos of the lies to stop the country from changing, but now that it might be used to make the country better, they won't have it, you hear me? They won't have it. And why should they? Things should never change. Right now in Australia, it is perfectly legal to lie in a political ad. Truth in advertising laws do exist. There is a reason that Pepsi can't claim it's fit for human consumption, because it clearly isn't. Because even in the world of garbage bubbly drinks, it is the most garbage. Yes, I am including you, sparkling water. You can fuck right off, you hear me? Just have the courage to be water. Don't pretend to be a soft drink. I'm not an idiot. I'm not going to McDonald's to eat a salad. I know what I'm there for. At least Pepsi has the courage to be terrible, both for you in taste and quality of nutrition. You understand? Be who you are. Be true to yourself. No more salads on the McDonald's menu. I ask, how can Pepsi be held to a higher standard than the people looking to run the country? How? In the, I imagine, likely event of a hung parliament, Albanese will face demands from Teal Independents and the Greens for tougher truth in advertising laws. And by tougher laws, we do mean just any laws. Anything would be good. Anything is better than nothing. Either that or we ban all political ads. Now, before you judge, don't get too crazy. Think about it. Hear me out. The parties can spend at most 20 cents on a piece of paper that they must mail in, and then they can write that they are running for the election, what party they are, and like an actual policy that they plan on implementing should we elect them. And that's it. That's all they get. They can just like scan it, put it online. Done. The Greens have launched a $10 billion election pitch to make public schools free, with parents facing steadily increasing public school fees, which now cost an average of $500 a year per child. The Greens are pledging to not only end the fees, but give parents a back-to-school payment of $800 per child. So that is a $300 net gain per child. Cha-ching! And that with the proposed 50-cent public transport fares across the country, saving people $2,400 on top of that. But wait, they aren't done yet. They're calling to expand free dental services under Medicare and establish a three-tier Robin Hood tax plan, which would hit large corporations and mining companies with 40% taxes on super profits to fund cost of living support. For a party who knows that they won't get into power, this is an ambitious political proposal, and for some reason has made some people real mad, including former football player and failed Souvlaki mogul Anthony Koutafidis, who, after failing to make the mayoral run in Melbourne, has decided that he will take a swing at the inner city lefty latte king himself by going for Adam Bandt's Melbourne seat. Now, look, it felt clear to me that Melbourne has rejected you, Chan. Nobody wants you, Kuda, given you only got 12% of the vote. In an election where businesses got twice the votes, and you ran on a pro-business platform and still failed? Come on, Jim, take the hint. Why are you seeking to run in an electorate broadly covering the same area, but without the businesses? And then, also including some of Melbourne's most consistently progressive voters. You think you can win these people over? You really believe in yourself, and I think that is enough evidence to maybe defund sports for a little bit. I think you've taken one too many hits to the head, Kuda. You understand that Bandt is there on a platform of action on climate change, of equality and equity, and Kuda is there, I don't know, forcing people back to the office, offering free coffees on a Monday. He has less chance of getting a seat than Stephen Hawking if he was on the NDIS. In an incredibly on-brand but still mostly unusual move, Clive Palmer has stuck his stupid head up in an attempt to trademark the phrases Clive and Pauline Party and the phrases Teal, Teals, Oz Teal, and the Teal Party, a political party that not only doesn't exist, many of those lumped into the Teal category don't actually want to be thought of as being part of some sort of Teal collective. They are independent and proud. But something being an incredibly stupid and incomprehensible idea has never really stopped Clive Palmer from doing it anyway. He is the Magellan of idiotic exploration. And much like Magellan has dedicated a large portion of his life making native people's lives harder than they need to be. But unlike Magellan, he didn't have the good grace to die by their hands. However, all that aside, let's focus on some of the major contenders. We've got Anthony Albanese, the leader of the Labour Party, the humble man's PM, who has completely abandoned the working class. And Peter Voldemort Potato Dutton, leader of the LNP coalition, a former Queensland cop turned real estate mogul, so you know, just an ordinary working class man fighting for ordinary working class people. As one of these parties is most likely to produce the next Prime Minister, that is to say, it's slim pickings out there. So, let's take a closer look. Taking a look at the Labour Party now, and to be honest, they have achieved very little, almost absolutely nothing, except a no vote to The Voice, cracking down on freedom of speech and social media, and a few harsh words towards Israel. Not like angry words, just sort of like, hey, don't, consider don't, I'll stand in the corner and be sad if you continue to do it. The most fired up we saw him was when he kicked a Labour senator out of the party for crossing the floor for supporting Palestine. Now, I'll grant you, buying a $4 million beach house in the middle of a housing crisis was, look, a bit of a, what do we say, how do we call it, out-of-touch, dumb-cunt manoeuvre, but the man is preparing for getting kicked out of Kirribilli, and he will need a house. It's no wonder that Albanese wants to introduce a four-year prime ministerial term. It gives him a full another year to avoid making any significant policy decisions, just the way he likes it. But as this wouldn't really be a possibility until, like, way into the future, he does sort of need to start at least thinking about the idea of possibly making policy announcements for the election, maybe. They couldn't start officially campaigning just yet, just heads up on that front, but they can hint at their first ideas, you know, start testing the waters for the upcoming election. So let's get a little hint from Albo 2025. Albo has promised $3 billion to finish the NBN and speeding up the internet, effectively killing your last excuse to avoid Zoom meetings. The funding would upgrade the fibre-to-the-node connections, providing an additional 622,000 new fibre connections with more than half in regional and rural areas. He's done it, guys. The madman has gone and done it. He's really done it. He has upgraded Australia's internet from its current 56k dial-up all the way to ADSL modem. No more of that noise. Yeah, that's the one. Drink it in one last time before we upgrade to ADSL. This is particularly important as we need to ensure that under-16s can't access social media at record speeds. Though, it is an old fast internet and social media bans, no. The PM is keen to get those young voters from voting Greens by promising to legalise permanent fee-free TAFE places on top of pledging to wipe up to 20% off student debt. This reduction will benefit 3 million Australians, removing $16 billion in health and other student debts. It's a student debt fire sale. They're discounting debts higher than a rug merchant who has had a shipping error in his favour. Seems these big promises aren't enough to sway the faltering public. Many analysts are predicting a hung parliament at the next election, with projections that neither Labor nor the Coalition will win enough seats to govern outright, meaning it's crossbench time, baby! You better watch out, crossbench is coming. Asked how he would navigate such a situation, Albanese said, we won't be entering into any coalition. That's the stubborn techno-solutions offered Labor Party that we've come to know and watch lose elections time and time again. Why learn when you can plough blindly forward like Wile E. Coyote running over a cliff? Just remember, don't look down, or else... Coyote, why'd you do it? Every time. People will almost always vote out the sitting government in hard economic times, no matter how deranged the opposition is. And Dutton, he's pretty deranged. Ticks that box real nice. All Dutton has to do is offer magic beans and people will lap it up because they want it to be true. I'm just waiting for him to announce which minority group is really responsible for all of Australia's woes this time around. 2025 really feels like it's going to be immigrants again, huh? Australia does love hating immigrants. I got all my money on immigrant hate. Thanks, Sportsbet. You can bet on anything these days, guys. Alright, starting by unveiling the world's longest campaign slogan, Let's Get Australia Back on Track, which is what you get when you give an unpaid intern a thesaurus and a ChatGPT login account. Here's what Pete Dutton said that he'll do if he becomes the Prime Minister. Starting where the Coalition always starts, as the year begins, he has promised to end the culture war once and for all by legislating to permanently make January 26th Australia Day. A bold move for a party of no policies. Starting the war with a strong stroking of the culture wars assures their voters that they haven't forgotten what matters most, making sure that nothing is woke. Don't worry about all the cost of living crisis. If we can't lock down this whole Australia Day issue, then nothing will ever sort itself out. Just like climate change, we don't need woke power from the wind or the sun. We can see out this whole climate crisis with Dutton's climate inaction plan as we ramp up gas production and look to nuclear, obviously. It doesn't matter that the reactors won't be built until the mid-2040s, entirely too late to have any kind of impact on climate change, because by then, we will be out of power, both metaphorically and literally, as our infrastructures get swept under the sea. But darling, it's better down where it's wetter. Take it from me. It's an old doom and gloom. In a surprisingly compassionate move, Dutton has said that he would restore the number of Medicare-subsidized psychological sessions from 10 to 20. Now, don't get too excited. The only reason he's doing this is because he knows that he's going to make things so much worse that even 20 sessions won't be nearly enough to handle all of the new trauma living in Dutton's Australia, let alone fix your old problems. And I hope that you aren't Indigenous or on welfare, or, Dutton forbid, Indigenous and on welfare, as he is eyeing off a full audit of spending on Indigenous programs and is looking to reintroduce the cashless debit card for working age welfare recipients. Because if anyone has had it too good for too long, it's Indigenous Australians and welfare recipients. To be fair, we haven't had a countrywide attempt to repossess welfare recipients' payments for quite a few years now, and I think we're just about due for a new one. They've been out there yucking it up, living the good life of somebody earning less than half of poverty line wages. just laughing at the working man. Those suckers. No wonder he had to go ahead and hire Morrison's old disinformation team. That's right, getting the old gang back together. But Pete Dutton has also vowed to cut wasteful government spending, saying that details were still to come, but they wouldn't come until after the election. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Dutton said there would be billions of dollars in savings that could come from scaling back the bureaucrats, but he wouldn't be drawn on the specifics of where the cuts would come from. Have I heard this rhetoric before? Whoa. Am I hearing this right? Mr. If you don't know, vote no is suddenly lacking in specific details over large bureaucratic change? Huh. Very strange that it's acceptable this time around. We doomed critical structures of help for Indigenous communities for years to come, but apparently it's fine for you to not provide any details this time around. Well, he who lives by the rhyming slogan dies by the rhyming slogan. Hey, if you're considering voting for the coalition, just remember, if you don't know, vote no. And I know that gambling is very popular in Australia, I understand that, but Dutton, I think he's like leaning into it a little too much, you know, by starting this new Kinder Surprise-inspired political system, what we'll call the mystery box system, where you only get to find out what the party stance is after you've voted them in, you know what I mean? What will it be? 3 years of far-right populism? Will it be socialism this time around? Or will this mystery box contain a shiny politician? They are rarer than a regular politician, but they are worth the exact same amount. After all, you can't break a promise if you don't make a promise, right? We love to rhyme. Gotcha, the media. No matter what he ends up doing, he can always claim that he intended to do that exact thing, right? No more accusations of backflipping, no needing to explain the changes had to be made because changes to the economic and global conditions are what they are. Just what I said is what it is, and that's what it was always going to be. No questions asked. And guys, we've come to the end of the regular episode. Thank you so much for hanging around, and you know, I hope you enjoyed yourselves. If you've come this far, I have to assume either you have enjoyed it or you fell asleep. Either way, thanks for the listen. If you have enjoyed yourself, do feel free to sign up to the Patreon. We do have a bonus story on the Patreon every episode just for you guys. Little treat for you. If you think you know someone who would enjoy these podcasts, this kind of material, do send them my way. I'd really appreciate that. Or feel free to come out to one of the live shows. Remember, I'm in a ton of places. You can check it out on my Linktree, linktree.com/Matt Harvey Stuff. Until then, guys, I'll see you next time. Be safe. Bye-bye.